Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Hi there, and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. I'm Tony Newhoff. I'm one of the co-hosts of this podcast, along with my esteemed partner, Dr. Rob Meter. And if you have tuned in for the past couple of episodes, you may have been wondering where Tony is. And today, when you listen in, you'll notice that Rob isn't here. And so you may be thinking, this is different. What's changed? Well, it's very simple, actually. Rob and I are simply going through a very busy season. And for the sake of efficiency, we're doing some solo interviews. But we plan to get back together and do interviews as a team, probably after a few months. The important thing, though, is that Rob and I are 100% committed to our mission of enhancing your family life, or as we like to say around here on the podcast, to help you love being home. And today's interview is part of that mission. I'm interviewing Deanna Singh, who was noted by the state of Wisconsin as a woman who inspires and by Forbes as an African-American woman everyone should know. Now, why do I really want you to tune in today? It's because it's hard these days to have conversations with our kids on the topics of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I know that it's just a more complicated decision nowadays than it has been in the past. And so we want to put tools in your hands. And Deanna Singh is a remarkable woman, very inspiring and engaging. And she describes herself as someone who grew up in a home where East meets West. Her father was from an Indian village, and her mother is African American. And she just grew up in this culture where she was the bridge between the cultures. So she's grown up with a unique perspective. And in addition to that, Deanna has just taken the world by force, honestly. She's a social entrepreneur. She's a business consultant, a speaker, and internationally recognized in the leadership area in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. She was educated her BA at Fordham University. Then she went on to study law to obtain her MBA and also obtained a certification in this DEI area from Cornell University. She has done everything from leading, talking to business leaders to working with people and also producing books for kids. And so we welcome Deanna with open arms to this conversation today and hope that you will sit back and enjoy and take notes. So without any further ado, let's get started. Deanna, I am so happy to welcome you to the Smart Family Podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be your guest.
I would love to hear a story that you told, I believe, as part of your TEDx talk in Milwaukee. It was so compelling to me when I heard it, and I thought our listeners really need to hear this. I wonder if we could start there.
Absolutely. So I'll tell you a truncated version of it. So we have some more time for questions. But I, you know, come from a really interesting background. So my mother is African American. My father is a Sikh American. And so for me, you know, as the firstborn in their family, I had this amazing opportunity to see these two people who on paper, you know, like didn't make any sense really, right? They came from different places in the world. They ate different food. They had different religions. And I always tell people like they got married after knowing each other for just 3 months. They didn't even speak the same language, right? So literally, if you think about like all the things that made them so different and so unique. And as their child, I watched what it looked like to build a bridge between one person and the other, and what it looked like and how you did that. And I always, you know, use the analogy of bridges because I do think that that's a really powerful metaphor for the work that I do in diversity, equity, and inclusion. But I, you know, I like to say that I got to run on that bridge and jump on that bridge and test its strength and bring other people up on the bridge with me, right? Like that was such a cool part of my experience as a child. So in the TED Talk, I talk about how we lived in a house where we were hosts to really at all given times about 30 people in a 3-bedroom ranch style house. So this is not a gigantic, you know, house, just a regular sort of 3-bedroom ranch style house. But we did that because my parents felt really strongly that they wanted to be a safe haven for people who needed that space, right? And so I, as a child, was really the only one in the house who was fluent in all the languages, who understood all the cultural contexts and stuff. And so I had a very, very important role, right? Like I was the go-to like translator and all the things in the house. I often talk about like little stories and stuff. I was just thinking the other day, because I actually live in the house that we grew up in. So talk about full circle. And I was talking to one of my cousins. I'm like, oh, I remember sitting on this couch and having all these like adults around me. And I was about 5 and I was reading through the driver's license book, right? So I wasn't teaching people how to do behind the wheel driving, but I certainly was teaching like, this is what this means. And this is the sign. And this is right. And reading it out loud to them and translating it into a different language. So when I say like deep, deep in it, right? I was deep, deep in it. And so for me, it was always an asset to come from these different worlds and build these bridges. But the first day of kindergarten was when I realized that it could be viewed in a very different way. So kindergarten comes, first day, so excited, Tony, so excited. I can still, I'm looking out that window right now that I was looking out as a 5-year-old. I can still remember like the outfit that I chose, packing that. I mean, I was so excited, but it wasn't really until I got into get on the bus that I realized my family wasn't coming with me. So all this excitement, right? Like doors open, I climb the stairs and I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, you all are letting me go by myself? Like, do you realize I'm 5? What is happening here, right? And so then I do what, you know, children sometimes do, right? Like I sat down right in back of the bus driver and I sat down and, you know, trying to like process the fact that I was getting, I'm sure they had said it. I'm sure that some, but it just hadn't clicked for me until that moment. And then all of a sudden somebody started pushing me on the back of my head. Just, you know, push, push. And I turn around, it's a boy who's a little bit older than me. And he says to me, do you know what God said when he made black people? Oh, I burnt another batch. And it was in that moment where a number of things became obvious to me, right? One, that, wait a minute, yeah, I'm a girl of color. At some level, I'm sure, again, that I knew that, but it wasn't... it wasn't something that I had stopped and maybe done a lot of reflection on, right? It was just part of like the world and spaces that I occupied that was very normal. And then also right this moment where it's like, yeah, no, the fact that you are this little girl of color who can speak multiple languages and just help people with their driver's license, it doesn't actually matter right here in this moment. In this moment, you are only the bunt of my joke. And yeah, that was just a really, really hard moment, and something that really stuck with me. And so I talk about in the TED Talk how, I mean, now it's on TED, so everybody knows it, right? But the first day my child actually went to school, same driveway, got to the end, bus doors open, and all this started to come back to me, right? Like this feeling, and just thinking like, wow, I am not going to be able to curate the world the same way my family had curated this beautiful world for me. I'm not going to be able to do that for my child. So I got on the bus with him, Tony. Oh. You know, and I went to school and he was kind of like, what's going on? And I was like, I just didn't want that to be his same experience. But, you know, as parents, I think we realize, right, there's these things in these moments. And as they get older, like I just wrote a note to somebody, to a dear friend. And I was like, thank you for being there with me as I watch my children grow beyond me. And that is like a huge component, right, of being a parent, understanding the experiences that we have, but setting them up for ones that hopefully, right, are always getting better.
Yes. Wow. I can't thank you enough for sharing that story, because I think it positions all of us who are listening or participating in this conversation to really dig into, you know, what it means to set our kids up to live in a different world, to view people with love, like through a lens of love, and not, not judging by skin color. So, Deanna, I know that you have a rich background for the work that you do, and it started at law school, I think. Was it? I mean, I'm sure you had the springboard of your home and your family and everything, but in terms of post-secondary education, I think you went to law school.
I did.
I'm wondering, what was the passion for you, or the reason that you chose to go to law school?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Wisconsin in a, you know, relatively smaller community. And I decided that I was going to go to school for undergrad in New York City. And when I got there, I had the really amazing opportunity to get to know the community that was surrounding my university in the Bronx. So I went to Fordham University, and there's this beautiful, just really diverse community, you know, surrounding the Bronx. And because I left a home with 30 people in it, going to my, you know, honors dorm was like, what is this? It's so quiet. Where are all the children and people talking and all this? And so very, very, very quickly, I made my kind of like place that I spent a majority of my time outside of probably sleeping and being in class was being in the community and being in the neighborhoods. And so I ended up being almost adopted by a lot of there was a lot of Dominican families and Puerto Rican families in the neighborhood adjacent. And so being just like adopted by these beautiful, wonderful people. And it also didn't hurt that, right, I had gone to school when I was just turning, I was 16. So I was also little, right? I sort of was looking for that kind of family support. And so when I say like eating dinner with them, like all the things, right? And that was just amazing for me. While I was there, though, it gave me this even broader perspective of what was happening in the immigrant experience, in particular in that neighborhood, in particular, you know, at that time in our country. And so it's a long story, but long story short, or short story long, I was able to help get an organization off the ground called LIFT. It's an amazing organization. I'm on the national board now, 20 plus years later. And what we do is we try and help families get out of poverty for good. So I started the New York office of that organization when I was in college. And the reason why I say that in response to your question of why you decided to go to law school is because when I was doing this work, it was phenomenal. It still is phenomenal. It's such an amazing organization. I realized that some of the challenges that were happening with the families that had brought me in, loved me, were part of our programming and the support that we were doing, was the fact that they didn't feel like they had access to real legal recourse. Like they didn't, the law was really something that was used to scare or deter, but not necessarily as a tool. And I am like a social justice to my core, went to school, right? And I'm like, no, the law is such a powerful tool. It's amazing. We can use it to do better, come up with, you know, and I just had this whole perspective on it. And so I went to law school, not really to practice law, but to be able to be a better servant to the communities that it raised me. And so that's how it started.
Not only did you study law, but I think you also went on to get your MBA.
I did.
So was there a story behind that as well? I'm sure there is. Please tell.
Yes. So I am a chronic social entrepreneur, meaning that I have started a number of companies with the primary purpose being to try and solve for big social issues. So I can't give you the whole list of them, but I promise you it has been a lot of different things in a lot of different spaces, all the way from starting a middle school to starting a tech company, right? So, and a little bit of everything in between. And now I, you know, even in the company that I operate now, we have a children's book imprint and a doula service. So like, there's just a lot of different, you know, social enterprises that have made up the breadth of my career. And one of the things that I realized having done this and, you know, successfully like started a number of companies was just that I was missing this component. And there's two things. One, I was missing that connection to a network of people that was very outside of the network that I had. I had a strong legal network. I had a strong social justice network, a strong education network, but I really hadn't developed a very strong business network. And so that was one really important thing. And then the second thing was that I wanted to undergird the things that I had learned. Yes, I had some tools in my toolkit. Were they sharp? Were they the right tools? Were they the ones that we should be using to do the businesses that we were doing? I had no idea. And so I also, you know, value education and that being a space where you can meet other people who are trying to do things, but also like learn what's the best practices. How could you approach this differently? What, you know, what have the academics and practitioners been able to find that can help you get to where you're trying to go faster? So that is why it's again an extension of like, I want to serve and I want to serve the best that I can. And I think that this education will help give me the grounding I need for the next step.
I love for our listeners to take away something practical from every episode we air. And so I wonder if you could maybe summarize in a sentence or two what you would really want to make sure that no parent misses out of our conversation today.
Yes. So I think one of the things, you know, I have all these wonderful conversations with people about how to talk to their children, you know, about some of these things like social identity and race. And I think one of the things that I really try to emphasize is that the most important thing that you can do is not have all the answers. As a matter of fact, if you try and set yourself to be the one, the knower of all things, I hold all information, you're going to fail yourself and you're going to fail your students, you're going to fail your children, you're going to fail all the young people who are looking up to you for that support. However, if what you do is you model how to be curious, that is something that they can take with them no matter where they go. And so I always try and encourage parents and teachers and educators, those of us who have the privilege of being able to work with young people on a daily basis, to really think about like what you're trying to do is you're trying to create this desire for curiosity and like how to find relevant information, how to find credible information, right? How to decipher information and come up with your own perspective and own your own perspective, how to learn when you've made a mistake and own that too. That is so much more valuable than trying to be the encyclopedia of all things right.
And I would imagine you really came by that perspective honestly, like with East meets West in your own home, and you were the translator. And wow, what an amazing position! What an amazing training ground you've really had for that whole perspective on curiosity and how you've harnessed it as well.
Oh, thank you. I always tell my parents, I'm like, you don't realize what a gift. What a gift you've given me, you know, being able to be in a place where I couldn't make the assumption. It seemed foolish, right? Like I couldn't make the assumption that the way that I did things was the only way to do something or was the right way to do something. I was always in a constant place of, oh, there's other ways. Let's check that out. What does that look like? And the ability and the freedom to remix in a way that made the most sense given what I knew about myself and what I was trying to do in the world. That is a lot. I mean, that's a huge gift that they gave me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what if in our neighborhoods, like in our actual community life, our next door neighbors, we did take that kind of perspective of, you know, how do you celebrate? What occasions do you celebrate? You know, how do you do it? Why does that hold meaning for you? I mean, there are just so many things for us to be curious about. And often, frankly, we fail to take the time. Like we're just, yeah, you know, we're busy. We carry on with our full lives and don't really turn our minds. I wonder if that might be a place to start talking about how we can, practically speaking, like live out perspectives of diversity and equity and inclusion in our daily lives with our kids. How would you say that we can do that when people live in a context such as the one I'm living in right now? You know, my area is predominantly white, and I would actually have to get in the car and drive quite a distance to be in a more diverse area. This is slowly changing, but by and large, my neighbors are other white people. And so how can parents who live in that context actually expose their children to other cultural perspectives and neighborhoods? What would you say?
So this is such a great question. And I have a challenge for everybody who's a listener. I challenge you to look more than 5 feet away from you, or where you're listening to this, you know, recording, and not see some kind of device that allows for you to connect to literally any place in the world. More than likely, within an arm's reach, we have a phone, a computer, right? Some kind of a resource that allows for us to engage in ways that no other generation has actually had the access to. And I think that that's a really powerful thing to be a parent right now when we're living in the information age, because there's so many amazing things that we get to expose ourselves to, that we get to expose our children to, that we just could not have done before. I made the joke earlier about being an encyclopedia. I remember the day the encyclopedia was delivered to our house. It was on this bookshelf in the hallway. It was all these beautiful gold lined pages. You felt like all the knowledge in the world was on that bookshelf, and you could just access it. It was so cool. Right. And now just think about that. That's in the palm of our hands. It's in our pocket. And it's much cooler because we can take virtual tours. We can have conversations with people. We can take classes. We can, you know, and these things are free. Obviously, there's some that cost something, but there's a lot of this stuff that's just 100% free. And so one of the things that I try to encourage people to do as they think about, like, how could I create more inclusion or more opportunities for diversity, is to really get creative. Instead of thinking, wow, I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of homogeneousness. Sometimes that word just really gets me, but you know what I'm saying, where there's a lot of people who are coming from the same backgrounds, right? Mm-hmm. Homogeneity. See, yes. I knew I was going to get it. I just needed to try it three times. But, you know, one of the things that I think is like, that's a creative challenge. Well, that in and of itself is a conversation, right? Wow, we're in a community where there's a lot of people that look like us, that comes from a very similar background.
You know, we talk about anti-racism. How do parents go about influencing their kids to become anti-racist? Like, not just to recognize that, you know, we love people regardless of the color of their skin, but to take that next step in breaking down the barriers and creating a society that's more inclusive.
I think that one of the things that's also here that's important is really about modeling. So a lot of times when we are having conversations, specifically conversations about systemic racism, there's a number of approaches that people will take. One is, right, no, it's not there. We're not going to talk about it. Another is, you're not really old enough. It's too complicated. We're not going to, you know, and those, I get that. I understand where those come from, you know, and it's not always negative, right? Oh, we're not going to talk about it because it's so much and I don't really feel like I'm an expert in it and there's lots of history and I could get it wrong. And right. So it's not necessarily there's a negative connotation to it, or you're too young. It's too complex. You know, I don't really even get it. But I do think that there are these opportunities that happen where it is important to stop and to model for our children some of the ways that we can have some of these more challenging and more complex conversations in a way that actually helps us see how we might be perpetuating some of the inequities, how some of the systems are actually bigger than us just being kind to one another. I think sometimes we like to focus on that, right? Like those behaviors, as opposed to some of these things that have nothing to do with behaviors, but really are about systems. Mm-hmm. And that is as hard as it might be to sort of navigate through that. It's those kinds of conversations that really, and you modeling it for your children, that help push some of those boundaries out and give them more comfort. Mm. So I think one of the big things, like, for example, right, one of the big things that I see happen is people really want to have these conversations about anti-racism or whatever when something really bad has happened. But what does that do then? I always think it's such a huge thing, right? Like, if you're only talking about these issues when something comes up in the news, then yes, you should have those conversations. And yes, that's an important, and no, we shouldn't be rose color, you know, glass looking out of these situations. Like, we should be realistic even with our children. But at the same time, wait a minute, let's make sure that we can take a step back and have some of these conversations even when it's not happening. Oh yeah, we live in a very homogeneous neighborhood. Is that because there's a certain group that works harder or because they have a different? No, actually it's not. Let's go back and take a look at historically, what were some of the assets that were given to people based off of the color of their skin and not given to others, right? Based off of where they immigrated from and not to others. And helping like the children just understand that, oh, okay, I see these things. I see the complexity of them. It's not just when bad things happen. There's just stuff that's happening in my day-to-day, where I get on the bus, what happens to the five-year-old in the front of the bus. Like, these are situations that are happening that have some of these bigger issues connected to it.
You mentioned age, you know, and having conversations that are a little more complex. Do you have advice for us on whether, you know, that stage of maturity where you would draw kids into conversations about systemic issues, for example? What's your opinion?
So I think that the best conversations with children are the ones that start with questions. And I think that it's important that we are not trying to push our own agendas onto our children, because that can actually have the reverse effect, right? This is exactly what you should believe, and you should never think this, and you should, right? And we start with the end and don't really give them the opportunity to do the thinking. And so I think, you know, some of the questions to ask is, hey, so this is going on in the world right now. What are your opinions about it? Hey, we saw this thing on TV, or somebody referred to this in a conversation, or, right? Because those are things that are happening in your day-to-day basis. Well, what are your thoughts on that? Have you ever thought about this before? Is this a conversation you've ever had with any of the friends that you have at school? What are you hearing, right? What are some of the things that might be problems here? How might you have felt if you were this other person in the story or this person in the story? Why do you think they have that? It's those kinds of questions that I think help build up a child's empathy. And those are kinds of questions that you can have. I mean, I don't know that there's an age that you don't have those conversations, that you're not starting those conversations. All the research shows that children are making race-based decisions by the age of 3 months. So when's too early? I don't know. I don't know that there is a time that's too early. Should you be changing your language and making sure that you're asking questions that, you know, children? Yeah, absolutely. Do you have to, you know, read a book on anti-racism when they're 2 years old and sit down with them and do, no, that's not, you know, like that, they don't have the language for that. That, right. But the same way that you're making choices about friendship and how you talk about friendship, the same way that you're making choices about making good decisions about your body and, right, those kinds of same like life skill conversations that we're having at very young ages, modeling how we're doing that in those spaces, I think can be really beneficial, and thinking about what's age appropriate when it comes to talking about race and inclusion.
Did your parents have those kinds of conversations with you in that question asking way? I'm just curious about what that might've looked like for you as you were growing up.
Yeah. You know, I don't think so. And I think that, in fact, I don't think that that was their mode of communication when it came to, they were much more of a parent's, like, I show you, right? I show you in my behaviors. But I think that was part of the reason why it made it really hard for me as a child to kind of navigate some of the things that I was experiencing, because I didn't know how to formulate those questions. And also, you know, they came from very homogeneous backgrounds too. My mom grew up in an African-American community. My dad grew up in a village with a Sikh American community. As children, they hadn't experienced the kinds of things that I was experiencing as a mixed race kid, you know, in an almost all white environment. And so that wasn't part of their toolkit. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I'm such an advocate now of doing this and following this behavior. Again, My parents did a phenomenal job. I have no complaints. Mom, dad, you're listening. I love you to pieces. But I also recognize how that could have helped me, right? I think about the little girl that was on the bus, like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know where to go. I'm not sure. This is my first time, right? How could I facilitate a conversation? And I think back, honestly, I even talk about this in the TED Talk. I think about that little boy even more than I think about myself. Because I'm like, you know, as an adult, if I had seen a child who was behaving in this way, right, that is not something that a six-year-old, I think he was six at the time, that's not something that a six-year-old came up with on your own, right? That is not a joke he made up. That is a joke he heard somewhere. So what is happening in that environment? Where is he going with the questions that he might have? Did he even understand what he was saying to me or the impact of what he was saying to me? Right. And all of those kinds of questions. Right. And I think, you know, there was a whole part of me that had just wonders. Also, the other character I wonder about a lot in that story is the bus driver. There's no way he didn't see and hear what was going on. So what happens when, as an adult, we're in a situation like that and we don't give space for the children to express, like, hey, this is why I said it. This is what I meant. This is my question. It could have changed. That young man and I, until I left for school, were in constant, some kind of conflict or another, all of it race-based. I could tell you story after story of things and the torment, right, of being the point of his ridicule. And if you think right to that origin moment, that first day of school, if the bus driver had even turned around and said, cut it out, stop that. That's not true. Are you okay? Let's get everybody off the bus and make sure that you're taking, right? Even the slightest thing could have changed the trajectory of my relationship with that young man, right? And my educational experience and his educational experience. So as adults, what are we doing? And are we fostering the kinds of spaces where kids can say, yeah, this is what happened, or this is what's going on, this is what I thought, I made a mistake. Okay, let's work through it. If we're not, then there's going to be another child sitting on the bus getting her, you know, hit in the back of the head. And that's not okay.
Mm-hmm. There's somebody I know who's in a mixed race marriage, and her children were basically receiving racial slurs from their extended family who didn't agree with the wedding. And I'm just wondering how parents can have meaningful conversations with their kids about that kind of scenario, because I'm sure there are listeners today who may be dealing with that same thing, sadly.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the hardest things is that these are conversations that I believe in my heart we will get to a place where these kinds of hurtful things will dissipate, right? I have to believe that. That's the work that I do every day. But I also recognize that we're not there yet. And so I think one of the biggest things to just keep in mind is you can't protect your children from every incident in which something may happen, or they may witness to themselves, or they may witness it with other people. But what you can do is, again, help them understand how to process. And so I think, you know, some of the big questions are, what did you think about that? Tell me what happened. How did you feel? What was the impact? What would you have liked to have happen? What is it that you believe? Do you believe those things are true? Right? In an instance like that, what would make you feel like you were able to stand up for yourself, but still feel safe? What does that look like for you? Right? And how would we position you to feel that way if it ever happens again? And the reason for that is because, again, you can't curate, right? My hard lesson. I got on the bus that day. They were ready for me the next day, right? I wasn't able to get on the bus the next day. You cannot curate the experiences. So what is it that you're going to do in order to make sure that no matter where they are, where they end up in the world, where they go, that they will be able to find their way back to that security and also back to that dignity?
Yes. And I would imagine those same questions would apply in the situation where, you know, my child, let's say, for example, has witnessed another child harassing or bullying somebody else on the basis of their skin color. that I would think those questions would still be equally applicable to help them process.
Absolutely. But I also think that in those, there's the questions I would add on top of that, right, are, well, what did you feel empowered to do? And I really think it's important for us as adults and as children. I say this all the time. We watch a lot of movies where there's a hero and something happens, and then they stand up on a big podium and they say all the right words, and the victim feels, you know, loved, and the person who's the perpetrator cries out that they're so sorry, and it ends with this bit. That is not real life. There is a reason that is in the movies. One of the things I think it's important to understand is that we need to teach our children some of the like smaller bite-sized things that, again, help them keep their dignity, help them feel safe, but also give them the opportunity to respond in those moments. So something as simple as, yeah, that's not cool. I don't like how we're talking to this person. How would you feel? That's not right. That's messed up. How would you feel? You know what? I think it's time for us to move on. Would you like to come with me? Right? These moments where, again, I'm not giving some grandiose speech. I don't have to go to violence. I don't have to do, right? I can just say, this is what I feel empowered to do in this moment. And this is what makes me be able to be a good friend and to show up and be an ally. This is what I would want if somebody was making me feel ostracized or excluded. Okay, let's start there.
It sounds like teaching your kids to notice, like mm-hmm. to be observant and to trust their gut in how they're responding.
Yeah, and practice. I mean, I think it's even, you know, I would even say sometimes your gut is going to tell you to do some things that will be naughty, right? Or that maybe aren't going to help you protect yourself. So maybe it's not that actually. Maybe it's, what does it look like again that's going to make you, even in the moments, right? Because there have been moments, there have been moments where I'm like, my gut was telling me to do something that I knew later on, right? My parents were not going to be happy about, that I was not going to be happy about, that were not in line in character, right? They're even thinking about that young man, some of the stuff, right, that happened, there was definitely a time where I was like, my fists were clenched and I was like, let me show you what I got. I might be short, but I got something in here I could, right? And that would not, my gut would have led me in the wrong direction. But having enough loving adults, being able to see, you know, how you could like, and quite frankly, just even being able to navigate in my own home, I knew that I could use my words. I knew that I could use my silence. I knew that I could use my relationships with other people. I knew that I could use my choices and decisions about how and when we interacted. I knew, right? I knew those things. And so that's what gave me the power, right? That's what gave me the ability to stand up and not always do what I had in my gut, but do what I knew at the end of the day was going to be the best thing in the long term.
Are there any particular, like, children's books, movies, any resources that you've been particularly impressed with?
At the risk of being self-promoting, but because I do really genuinely believe in the work that we've done, I did write a book for American Girl, part of their girls' guides. So there's a book called The Girls' Guide to Race and Inclusion that came out in 2021. It's a really powerful tool. We've gotten so much positive feedback from people about engaging in these conversations. There's challenges in there. We've even had adult teams who have bought it for their team conversations. So it's a really useful tool. And then speaking of my children, we have a children's book imprint called Story to Tell Books, and we put out books that feature positive images of children of color. So there are picture books. There's a novel that my children actually at the age of 7 and, well, how old were they? They were probably 7 and 11 did. But they wrote a book themselves about building bridges and kind of what that looks like from a child's perspective. So again, if you're interested in other resources, would highly recommend, you know, doing some searches. There's wonderful materials out there. Would welcome you to pick up either The Girl's Guide to Race and Inclusion or the children's books.
Yeah, thank you, Deanna. And we have notes that go along with the episode, so we'll be sure to have links in those notes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks. Yes.
I would love for everyone who's listening to be able to connect with you and find your resources. And I'm just wondering, where is the best place for us to do that?
Absolutely. So it is very easy to connect with us on LinkedIn. And we try to put out a lot of resources that just help people as they're navigating through this journey. We have an amazing community of people there that we're learning from, that we're trying to share information with. So we would welcome you to, if you have any additional questions or want to connect, to look there. Also, if you're interested specifically around the work that we do with diversity, equity, and inclusion, you can go to our website, which is upliftingimpact.com. If you're interested in some of the other things that I've talked about on the program, you can also go to deannasingh.com.
Great. Deanna, I sincerely just loved having this conversation with you and meeting you. So thank you. It's been a privilege.
Well, thank you so much. I mean it too. Like, I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day, and I'm like, you know, I was talking about the fact that we all have privileges. I have privileges. Everybody has privileges, right? It's just, how do we use them? And one of the great privileges that I have is getting in front of microphones and being able to share my story, but hopefully to encourage other people. So whenever, I don't take it lightly, Tony, for that you've given the invitation. I feel like it's an extension of what I'm purposed to do here on the planet. So I'm immensely grateful. So thank you very much. If there's ever anything I can do to support you, to support your work, or anything like that, by all means, just reach out and let us know.
Well, as we wrap up today's conversation, I think you'll agree that Deanna just brings so much, and her passion is pretty palpable. I'll read you a quote that comes from her website. "Passion is often masked as a luxury when it really is an essential ingredient in life." Isn't that true? And out of today's conversation, I just wanted to highlight three of the themes that Deanna talked about, that in your family life, as you help your kids to explore other cultures, really get curious. Just allow your kids to also form these plans and be actively involved. Both model the kinds of behaviors you're looking for from your kids, but also collaborate with them in what makes them curious. What do they want to find out? How would they like to explore the diversity either in your geographic area or what's out there in the world? Use your technology tools. Anyway, collaborate with your kids. Secondly, it's so important when our children are exposed to something that is disturbing, either a statement that they've been subjected to themselves or that they've witnessed, where they've witnessed racial injustice unfolding before their eyes at the playground. Ask them questions such as, how did that make you feel? What do you think? What do you believe should have happened here? And the other thing that struck me that Deanna mentioned is, if your child witnesses something that is disturbing, don't leave them with the impression that they need to give some Disney hero speech. It's perfectly fine for them to be pretty casual about it and just say, "Hey, that's not cool." Or ask the person they're concerned about, "Are you okay?" Just to be sensitive, but also it's in the small things that we really make progress as a culture. So if you have enjoyed today's episode, I would just ask you to share it around. And if you haven't done so already, we would absolutely love it if you would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. I know we've said that several times, and maybe you've listened to a few of our episodes and you've been on the go. I totally get it. You've been in the middle of a workout or you've been driving somewhere and you just haven't gotten around to it. If you would be able to just take a moment, leave us a rating and a review if you're so inclined. We would be so very grateful. So that's it for today's episode. As I mentioned earlier, we are committed to bringing you conversations that help you with your family life. And if you have an idea for an episode, we would love to hear from you. Reach out through our website or reach us on social at Smart Family Podcast. Whichever way, we are totally open to ideas. So that's it for today's episode. Again, thank you so very much for joining in. We at the Smart Family Podcast are committed to bringing you conversations that help you love being home.